I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we're up to our knees in the original cast of MASH. I'm your host, Bob, the Queen of Summer Mackie, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and somebody took my juice money.
Lightning Magnet Chris Antista.
That's right. And today's episode is the Season 6 premiere, Bart of Darkness.
Hello, Mrs. Cumberdale.
I love that's actually my fan theory is that's Barney's son.
Oh, wow.
Look for my bad article on BuzzFeed.
Cumberdale.
Yes, exactly. And today's episode aired on September 4th, 1994. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real life history.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy, Bobby. Tupac Shakur pleads guilty and not guilty on charges in two different states in two separate trials. Speaking of music, Kermit Unplugged emerges in music stores, but it cannot defeat the soundtrack to the hottest movie of the summer, The Lion King. And best of all, The Simpsons premieres as scheduled, possibly thanks to a Major League Baseball strike.
Oh, man. Thank you, Major League Baseball, for going on strike and not delaying this viewing.
Okay, sports fans, I said possibly because of all the things I never want to argue about. I don't know that Fox had the rights to baseball at this point. I think that took a little bit.
Oh, you know what? Actually, no. Mm. I remember this because of 30-2010. In a 96 30-2010, one of the TV things I got was Tommy Lasorda saying, like, hey, baseball on Fox, pretty great.
Yeah.
So,
can you believe it? They're a real network now.
So, yeah, that's 2 years away. But this aired 2 days before my 12th birthday.
I wouldn't recognize Tommy Lasorda without a Sega hat.
I mean, any professional sport was the bane of the primetime cartoon watcher. It just would forever ruin Futurama, move King of the Hill like 8:37 p.m.
Awful. Burned off on like Sunday at noon just because they couldn't air it at its regularly scheduled time.
When will this pennant chase end?
So we are still in production season 5. If you don't follow Talking Simpsons or are that deep into Simpsons production information, there are always a few episodes produced for the season but held over for the next season. This was one of them, but it was intended to be the season 5 finale.
Yeah, it is. In general, this happens just as a quirk of television production for an animated show versus a live action show. On a live action show, they would almost never have a holdover because, like, you filmed it this week and it airs next week. But the up to nine months production length that it takes for a Simpsons episode means you'll always have holdovers. Like, the first two episodes of airing season 5 were holdovers from production 4, and this is the same deal here. But,
and then it was a bigger deal because those were episodes from a different showrunner and from a different writing staff.
But these were extreme situations of a holdover from season 5 that, had it not been for an earthquake, they would have aired in airing season 5. And I think that's also what makes this the longest season of The Simpsons ever. This is season 6 is a 26 episode
26?
Season.
Wow. 26, and there were extra episodes baked in from the critic team, correct?
Yes. So you have two holdovers from this and then two critic team episodes, The Crossover and Blood and Guts Murphy. So you have that in the holdover.
And a clip show.
And a goddamn
the
clip show.
Worst clip show. We're going to do it. We're going to waste a week of your Simpsons time with it, but it must be done.
Hey, the clips are funny.
For completeness sake, and also, like, production season 6, technically two episodes of production season 6 get held over into season 7, so you don't even see all of season 6 this one. But
yeah, and in modern Simpsons times, last time I checked in, there would be like 8 to 10 holdovers of the previous season that would air at the beginning of the next season. So.
I do wish this episode was the finale. You said it in the previous episode. It'd be really fun to acknowledge the upcoming summer.
I really wish it was. For me, it was weird because this episode is all about summer, about getting a pool. And after the season 5 finale happened, our family did get an above ground pool. So I lived the Bart of Darkness summer without the cast.
I wanted to ask somebody about that because only Brett has like the white trash pool story.
Oh, I had the white trash pool.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
My family never had a pool. It wasn't that we couldn't afford it, but that my dad didn't want all the work of keeping up a pool, which I get it. I understand the work and price of it, but also my dad doesn't like fun. And so I had to
clean a lady's pool for a while. It is one of the worst jobs. It was not sexy in the slightest. It was a lot of burnt. you know how chlorine burns your eyes? Imagine that feeling on your fingers before it hits the pool. It sucks to shock a pool. It's the worst. I'm glad it's mentioned slightly in this episode because the maintenance is terrible.
Yeah, it was really great personally for me to have the entire pool experience for the summer, building the pool, using chlorine, having friends come over. And then when the summer is over, this is the first episode that airs, I'm like, oh my God, it's my pool experience captured on The Simpsons.
I was going to say my favorite episodes from this era all seem to involve The Simpsons getting something a kid can use in the backyard. If it involves a treehouse, a trampoline, or a pool, I'm down.
I actually liked this one coming at the end of summer because it's basically a Labor Day weekend episode when you're ready to reflect on summer. So showing you a whole episode that's just about summer fun, it kind of lets you.
It was just I love Secrets to a Successful Marriage. It makes me it may make me laugh more than this, but this one seems more special. There's a lot of like original musical numbers. Yeah. There's a lot of spot on parodies. It looks more expensive. It looks more prestigious than the relatively straight laced Secrets of a Successful Marriage.
They had a lot of time to work on this because of the North Ridge earthquake, which happened in January of 94.
January 17.
That will let you know about The Simpsons production schedule. An earthquake happened in January, which stopped an episode from airing in early June.
Yes.
That's basically how long things are in the pipeline for. Mm-hmm. And Henry, you've done the research on the North Ridge earthquake.
Yeah, so it was a 6.7 quake, which is pretty strong. Like, I've lived in San Francisco or in the Bay Area for more than a decade. Like, a 4.3 is the most I've ever felt, and that's like jostles you awake in the morning.
I still go right back to bed when I feel
But, I make sure I have to tweet earthquake first, and then just let everybody know I felt one. But
hashtag earthquake.
But so, yes, this was in L.A. It affected the major L.A. area. And it was on January 17th, 1994. It was a massive earthquake that wrecked a lot of shit. It did at least $13 billion in damage. The estimates were from $13 billion to $40 billion of damage to the entire area. And 57 people died in it.
Holy shit.
It was really bad. And the Film Roman building, where a lot of production was happening, was not spared in that destruction. Yeah. And also, Oakley and Weinstein joked that they were the only guys who were like, yeah, let's go to work. There was an earthquake, but and they find out no one's there because the building is might come down around them any second.
Go home, Bill and Josh.
I think it looks like a stucco cracked egg. That's Film Roman.
Matt Groening has a great anecdote. It's very short, but he said the first thing he thought of when the earthquake happened was, I can blow deadlines. This is great. I can blow deadlines.
I thought the same thing about 9/11 in college. If I can may pull out a college fact from the classes I took to replace the math ones I didn't take. Mm-hmm. An earthquake is one of the rare natural disasters that has, when people like us hear it rated this on the Richter scale, it's one of four ways that earthquake is measured because of how well prepared California is for an earthquake. An earthquake is measured also by how much monetary damage it does. There is no such classification for a hurricane because at this point, California can experience a devastating earthquake with no property damage.
We're prepared enough for it.
A 6.6 earthquake would have wiped out the populace of a city with buildings in 1910.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that, Chris, because if you if you live in the Bay Area and some other places in America, there are a lot of really, really old buildings. Like, I live in a 100-year-old apartment building, and when you walk in, it says, this has a soft foundation. Yep. It is not earthquake safe. So eventually, California made my building's managers put in a new foundation. They're doing that now, actually. They had to gut the entire garage. There's men coming in and out of the place every day with these giant pipes and everything. I don't know how they do this. I don't know how
sometimes it's literally giant springs. It looks awesome.
Did they call up Surly Joe, or did they watch the half-ass guide to foundation?
Get out of here, Bob. We gotta make this foundation earthquake-proof.
It turns out we needed a 50-cent washer.
I got that warning too. Now I'm not even I just live in a old house. Bob's just seen it now. Like, it is a converted house with like four units. So I'm not as worried as when I lived in like a 25 unit place that was on top of a parking structure.
Oh, I also like this. I may talk more about meteorology.
Sure.
We are recording this from San Francisco. You guys live in the Bay Area as well. There are no hot days. Henry and I are from Florida, and the way this episode starts out is absolutely something we experienced during summer.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, it was just as bad in Ohio.
I'm sure
it was. Believe it. I mean,
but like, Bob, it has been a decade without the hot time of year. I think there's like a hot week in here. We put on a fan
in October,
and then the sun goes down and it's 50 degrees. So like, but in Florida, our air conditioning went out. Whenever air conditioning went out, and it does happen, you're on a waiting list, and I just have to sit in a bathtub filled with water because this whole state is uninhabitable. I would open up my fridge and put a tent next to it.
There was one time in Florida, there was a power outage, and it was like just the night without AC. I was like, I am dying. Yeah, I just can't.
It felt like
this.
Death.
I am dead. No one is meant to live here. This is to kill you.
And the secret shame is I have never in my life touched a thermostat. Ever. Ever. Yeah. I don't know how to do it. So, like, I don't know how they work. I don't know what temperature
is. Well,
you've
never lived through a winter, so it's fair.
Yeah, I put on a sweater, take clothes off, just like The Simpsons.
So there is one last thing I want to say about the LA quake, that the animation contemporary of The Simpsons, Animaniacs, it interrupted their production too, and like they did with many things, they did a cartoon about it. And so they did an entire cartoon about this specific quake in LA that, as a kid, it made no sense to me because I lived in Florida. I didn't pay attention to, no matter how extreme an earthquake was in LA, I did not pay attention to it. But here is a song about it.
Of course it's a song.
This is the city, Los Angeles, California. On a starlit winter night, when the moon was shining bright, back in January of 1994.
Jesus.
At 4:30 in the morning, and without a single warning, something strange began to move the floor. A quake, the house begins to shake.
God,
you're bouncing
so
on the floor and watching all your dishes break. You're sleeping, there's a quake, you're instantly awake. You're leaping out of bed and shouting,
oh, for heaven's sake!
One more,
I ran outside with neighbors, their faces filled with shock. That's because I'm standing there in nothing but my socks. Oh, a quake.
That looks so
beautiful,
fucking,
yeah.
Animaniacs was, I was going to say, too good for this world, but since we're recording it, a little while ago it was announced they're bringing it back.
And I'm sure it won't look as good or have the great orchestra backing it.
It shouldn't have looked that good to begin with.
No cartoon should have.
But it's the power of Spielberg. Hopefully he still has a little bit of that left after BFG.
Yeah. I'm hoping TMS has the availability to do it. They're not going to
No,
TMS.
They will never
I
do
know.
That.
They're going to go with Flash Animation.
Titmouse. Titmouse will be doing animating.
Well, I mean, Warner does a ton of animation. It's but some of it has a higher budget than others. You can tell, like, Steven Universe is technically Warner Animation, but same is Tom and Jerry meet Willy Wonka. Yeah.
That oddly has some good animation in it. Too good for the product. I'm serious. Just some of the character animation, they look like the Tom and Jerry from specifically the 40s.
Wow.
Yeah.
I saw that trailer for the Tom and Jerry Willy Wonka crossover, and I just wanted to walk into Warner Bros. And throw over a table, hey! You won't do much shit!
You didn't have to do this.
God damn it!
Nobody wanted this.
You didn't create either of these things.
Well, the animation, I also gauge it by the animation quality in the WWE films Warner Brothers makes of them, like WWE meets the Jetsons.
Vince McMahon Rock, what are you doing here?
There's a full commentary then on Laser Time's Patreon.
Oh, boy.
Check it out.
Oh, my God. CM Punk Rock.
But all right, so into the episode itself. Every episode should start with Hans Moleman catching on fire.
Dying, yeah.
Well, you're certainly doing your job today, Mr. Sun. Oh, rats.
And then we visit the Springfield Wax Museum for the second time since Lisa Beauty Queen.
Yeah, and Reagan's head would not be on a pike. How dare they insult a president like that?
But all the melted wax is great. And now I've seen, as a kid I hadn't, but now I've seen enough MASH to understand the accessories floating around
and
his feet.
Technically, one of the only ways John Lennon as a guest starred in The Simpsons.
Yeah. Yes. And of course, Skinner would go to the Wax Museum, and of course, he would go to the MASH exhibit. He is that boring.
Yes.
Up to my ankles in the cast of MASH.
I mean, that's probably an exciting day for him. He went to the 4-H Club first and then came here.
Got radar in my socks.
And then Just Stamp the Ticket Guy returns. Not to even say anything. He just punches a guy in the face, which random punches in the face, a motif of season 5.
Mm-hmm. And, for singing the John Denver song.
Then comes, I thought, a very ingenious moment for Homer.
For the rest of the summer, we can live inside the refrigerator.
Homer, the fridge wasn't meant to be used this way. Although I must say, it's certainly refreshing.
I got the idea when I noticed the refrigerator was cold.
Won't this overload the motor?
Hmm.
Marge, can you set the oven to cold?
It's cool in here, boy.
It's cool in here, boy. Yeah, I would have tried this as a kid, but obviously my parents would have said, what are you doing? You're destroying the refrigerator. And that sound of the fridge dying was such great Foley. Like, it dies so perfectly. You hear the fan go out. The only time I broke a fridge was not over this, the engine going out. It was...
I'm breaking one right now.
It was trying to get rid of ice in my frozen over freezer. And then puncturing the coolant things. I was like, well, there goes all the Freon. This is it.
There's a fine line between breaking the ice and stabbing your refrigerator.
Right,
well,
in the heart.
Well, I had a very old fridge in my apartment. Bob had seen my oven. My fridge was almost as old as that.
I think I saw your oven on I Love Lucy.
Yes. But so my fridge is just that, was almost as bad. It was a combo freezer. The door was the same for the freezer and the fridge, which caused a ton of freezer burn and ice to build up, until eventually I lost more than half of my freezer to ice, and I just had to chip away at it. And then when I broke it, my landlady kind of had to admit, like, you were owed a new freezer, a fridge, a long time ago, so I'm just going to buy one.
Love that about renting. And I wasn't quite white trash. My parents were very cheap. I think they discouraged me from using a thermostat, therefore I never really learned how to use one, and I don't. But the lounging in your tidy whities, I can do remember those.
I like that for Bart.
We're not quite white trash, but I know we did that.
Well,
and
when you're 10, also, you haven't developed enough shame of your body yet. So
yeah.
Like,
and I've either had, like, fat back knee or back hair. I do not like being around in my shirt off, but that is how I cope with heat, is I just take my shirt off and wear my underwear.
A lot of sitting around in my bathing suit for me.
Yeah. Oh, that doesn't breathe well at all.
Well, I don't care.
It's like basting your own balls.
It was a cute little thing of Maggie sleeping on the gelatin.
Falling asleep. A callback to the old gelatin dessert jokes on The Simpsons.
Oh, that's true.
And, yeah. Oh, my God.
And I love Homer's kid logic of, like, can't you set the oven to cold? Like, if the oven can get hot, it can get cold, too, right?
This is the codependence. It's carrying over from the last episode.
They don't do enough jokes about Marge's dyed hair. I like the fan blowing it back and
forth.
She
stabilizes it.
It's really good, yeah.
The kids are misled by several disgusting food trucks.
I love this.
I'm all out of ice cream!
It's true, you know.
Ice cream!
It's true, you know.
Chili! Red hot Texas-style chili! And we got ginger ale! Boiling hot Texas-style ginger ale! Texas!
Ah, face it, Bart. Our salvation isn't just gonna roll by on the back of some stupid truck.
The poolmobile, what an awesome idea.
It is. I looked at it. I couldn't find a real world equivalent if there was a poolmobile. Not that I don't want to give the Simpsons writers credit for coming up with this.
It's hard to drive around. You lose a lot of water.
Oh, and they make that joke, too.
Yeah.
So I was hoping.
Get that window replaced.
I'm hoping it exists. I hope there's a mobile pool somewhere.
I would think there has to be. You just put a cover on it and the water wouldn't
come
out.
Dude, like a blackout in, like, L.A. in an inner city neighborhood? Like, there should be a way for people to get some relief.
When you open up a fire hydrant. You know, yes, playing it, like in all those famous photos.
Right, I do want to say that one, this is a weird time for me. And it's really true. It was a very Warner Brothers style joke. And it also made me wonder, do people still have ice cream trucks? Because we didn't really.
Oh, we did.
Bought something from an ice cream truck maybe once.
I'm from Florida, where everything is super spread out. Mm. A lot of people living. So they'd come to, like, Little League games because they knew we could sell to a bunch of people. It didn't run around neighborhoods.
Oh, mine did, because I lived in a lot of suburban residential neighborhoods. And I can credit ice cream trucks for introducing me to the concept of anxiety. Something I live with every day. It's like, you hear the sound. Where is it? I need money. Is it going to pass me by? What am I going to get? Oh, God. Oh, God. It's here. I need 35 cents, Mom.
I'm so old I can remember, like, a snow cone was 35 cents and sometimes not having enough to get that. And the other cheapest thing was a fucking pickle. This guy sold room temperature, summer Florida room temperature pickles in a bag of its own juices. If you didn't have the 10 cents to get a snow cone, he was not flexible.
That's disgusting.
But I realize San Francisco does have an equivalent of the ice cream man. There are people who push around carts.
Oh, yeah. You see those guys with the carts everywhere.
And that ties in, because if you want to believe Bugs Bunny, Pink Panther, Woody Woodpecker, Tweety Bird are still alive, it would be solely in the form of ice cream bars.
With those delicious gumball eyes.
Gumball eyes.
Gumball put in the wrong places.
Or M&M's. Sometimes it's just M&M's.
I need a gumball eye on mine.
It's pretty gross.
I haven't seen, I don't see as many of the, there are definitely ice cream truck guys even at the ice cream cart people at the Pride events this last weekend. But I still see on the street, much more the guys with their hot dog. Well, they're not even hot dog stands. They're just like a hot dog mini cart. They're just overhead in the production of hot dog carts in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We were just in New York City where like hot dog carts were big as shit. They were really big, and they were really more like kebab carts that are like, if you want a hot dog, fine. This is kebab.
We're moving forward.
It's kebab town.
Yeah. It's progress.
And I forgot it until seeing it this time again. It's just like that last Texas.
Like, definitely an ad lib, I think, by Hank Azaria.
I know, and that's why I love that clip, because that's something a Warner Brothers character would do, would like look into the camera and say, it's really true, you know?
Yeah. It's like boiling hot ginger ale. Yeah.
Boiling hot ginger ale.
And the way the pool mobile text perfectly moves across the screen when it drives by, like, that's just great.
I'd like to point out it was driving on the sidewalk just a little bit. But,
well, Otto's probably high.
Though, that's true. When I was Bart's age, though, I would not swim in my underwear. I had gotten enough shame then of just, like, I think the last time I swam in my underwear, like, in tighty whities, I was 6, and that's when I realized, like, well, these are just invisible. Like, everybody can just see my genitals.
I can see your noodle.
If I get drunk in Florida and someone lives in an apartment with a pool, odds are we're going to go back there and I'm going to jump in the pool with my underwear on.
Shut down Melrose Place after
at that point, just go in naked and save your, like, you'll have dry underwear when
I do
you
that.
Get out.
It sucks. I have tremendous body issues, so I'll take any opportunity to swim at night. Don't care about the bottom half at all. Look at my dick, balls, and butt all day. Just don't look at my goddamn awful sunken chest. Don't look at my back knee and back hair, please.
Well, and speaking of nudity in pools, I went to YMCA's full of bullies, but I never heard of a swimsuit being stolen like what happens to Martin, and I absolutely was the Martin at YMCA.
We did pantsing stuff.
You wouldn't take it all the way off.
We wouldn't take it off, and that was never... because someone did that to me when I was really young, and it like fucking traumatized me. Like, just pulled my pants down, got the underwear all the way. My dick is flying around. I'm 6 years old. But we would do that as little kids. And I remember we stopped and like, oh God, that puberty didn't set in. Like, we can't do that to, we can't do that to, let's call him Hiram anymore. Because
it's not fair.
It's not fair yet. No puberty doobly.
Some of us are actually men.
Yes. Well, but never to women. We never pulled down tops. It was just guys pulling down swimsuits underwater, not just outside the water.
Just classic grab ass of
total grab ass when you're underwater to surprise somebody. I can't not get in a pool and not like mess with some of my friends somehow, some way. Or my girlfriend.
Well, Martin was wearing 17 pairs, but he did bring it on himself.
He did bring it on himself. Martin in this episode is great.
So great.
I love how fey he is, and that he doesn't get how annoying that could be. That exactly was me. Though I was Milhouse, I also feel a lot for Martin. I was like, I did all these things as Martin, and I was the annoying kid who's just like, yes, we should be friends. Felicitations. Yeah. And not really real being gay and not realizing how gay you seem to everyone around you.
King!
And I do want to direct people to, actually, I just recently read this great article on thetoast.net called Martin Prince's Finest Moments, or it's like the Queen of Summer, Martin Prince.
That's
and
great.
Appreciation of Martin Prince, who is just lives his life as himself and doesn't care. Even the best example they gave of that is like him inviting Nelson to his party and Nelson knocking off his invite. Is like, you dropped this, Nelson. Mm-hmm. Oh, you dropped
Nelson,
this.
Yeah.
Here you go, Nelson. Here you go, Nelson. It's a very good article. I would give it a read, folks. And then just as Dave Merkin loves, he gives them something and takes it away immediately.
Sorry, Bart, dude. We got to fill this thing with Epsom salts and jam it on over to the old folks' home.
Oh, well. Same time tomorrow, Otto?
No way, man. One day of summer is all we're budgeted for. I guess it is kind of a tease.
So I'm guessing the Otto is the de facto lifeguard, or he's supposed to be. But it's odd. It is just a pool for kids. Marge and Homer don't go into it.
Yeah.
And they probably would enjoy a swim.
Well, it is a pool mobile, but clearly it's like 3 feet deep at best. It's not a great pool, honestly. But it's a cool... Its mobility is one thing, but it is not a useful
pool. See, I have to imagine it exists because the funniest thing I ever saw... My friend denies he said this. I was in L.A., I forget for what. And you have to remember, they still have the fucking limos with the jacuzzis in the back.
Oh, yes.
You're right. I was thinking of that, actually.
And I just remember, like, a really, like, button-down friend. It was like, there's a limo turning the corner, and I'm just talking to him. You've seen enough limos in L.A., you don't bat an eye. And then, we should make the marketing call over there. Holy shit, look how drunk that guy is! And a limo turned the corner with the drunkest executive throwing up all over himself in the back of an empty jacuzzi. that I've ever seen in my entire life. My buddy Mike denies up and down that, like, I would not have, like, pointed and yelled that and, like, you totally did because it was the most shocking thing that drove past us in 4 seconds.
The jacuzzi is more like a de facto barf bucket.
Yeah, but it's L.A., a city of freeways. If they have those, then why can't a pullmobile exist?
Uh-huh. That's such a BoJack Horseman moment. That's what it feels like, which I would love to do an episode about that on a Talking Toon show. But yes. The pullmobile having no budget enough only to tease children with one day, that also feels like their comment on government waste. That, like, the government was like, oh, we'll build a pullmobile, but we will not give it this budget it needs for more than one
day. It cost $4 million to build, $400 is gas up.
So if you remember the classic season 2 episode, Brush with Greatness, this is a very similar scene, but Homer learned his lesson from the, will you take us to Mount Splashmore?
I love that. You would have had to have seen that episode to get that joke, and The Simpsons doesn't always do that.
Dad, as you know, we've been swimming, and we've developed a taste for it. We both agree that getting our own pool is the only way to go. Now, before you respond, you must understand that your refusal would result in months and months of... Can we have a pool, Dad? 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 Can we have a pool, Dad?
I understand. Let us celebrate our new arrangement with the adding of chocolate to milk.
I think if you remember that Mount Splashmore episode, it is funnier.
Yeah.
But it's also funny on a level. It's like they're being very diplomatic. It's like, this is what will happen to you if you don't give us what we want. In Mount Splashmore, they're just like, this is a full assault on you at all times.
It's like a full day you see in a montage. But I love Lisa holding her hand up and Bart getting a little loud. Right before them unplugging the television, before Homer acknowledges them, just like, yes, honey.
How much work Homer puts into, like, turn my head this way, now I'll turn it back on. They're like, yes, Lisa. I love that they can recognize, in a previous episode, we broke you with this, so we've proven we would win again. Mm-hmm. It's not just them recognizing previous seasons, but it's also like, in season 2, they would have just said, we can't afford a pool. We have no money for this. And instead, Homer's just like, well, then I guess we bought it. And
I mean, it was the swinging 90s, so my upper lower middle class family could afford a pool, but a white trash above ground pool is not a huge expense. It's still kind of pricey.
It's attainable luxury.
It's a fucking PlayStation Pro minus the water cost.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, that whole summer we had to, like, level out the ground and dig and stuff, but we just did that ourselves. We didn't hire people to do it.
And Brett told a story on one of our podcasts about, like, when that pool broke, like, just being one of the most colossal displays of liquid you've ever seen in your entire life. Which they're not guaranteed at all.
No, like, I think we replaced that pool once in 25 years, so still going strong.
An above-ground pool is seen as lower class than an in-ground pool. Like, an in-ground pool proves you did, like, landscaping and dug up shit and poured concrete and put pipes in.
I don't know, having never had one, but, like, an above-ground pool is like a fucking stage you put your shirtless body on, whereas... If it's lower in Florida, you got to build a fence around your pool. Like, no, too many people with, like, fucking acres of land. Yes. Like, I'm not going to put a fence around all this. You just put a little fence around a pool.
Yeah.
It's the law.
Children won't climb into it and die.
Where it's not really a requirement with above ground pools. So you would just see trash people elevated 4 feet in the air.
Oh, actually, with a pool, I almost drowned once young as a kid.
Oh, my God.
I was, like, 2 years old, and it was classic baby falls in the pool where I was, when she was pregnant with my brother, she was still working, and I was being taken care of by the woman in town who took care of, like, in the neighborhood who took care of kids.
The nanny?
And she had a backyard pool, and so one day when my mom was coming to pick me up, she saw me walk away and just plop into the pool, and she said, I didn't have a look on my face of drowning. She says it has haunted her to this day of just seeing me with a blank look on my face looking up in the water at her.
Oh my God, that's going to haunt me now.
And so she is. She was very pregnant, but pulled me out of there herself. And so,
oh, baby Henry, your antics delighted us once again.
The kid being punched in the stomach, waving at Lisa.
Yes, that kid is
true. I do love that scene. Just like, I mean, it happens later, but he's enjoying being bullied for the benefit of Lisa's approval.
I was never the cool guy, but like I would the guy like, ah, look, my pants are falling down outside the supermarket. Hey, girl, pay attention. Any attention at all will do.
Well, and I was like that kid in being like having friends who were clearly your bullies who acted like your friend. Like, it'd be funny if we did this to you, right? I'm like, yeah, we're having fun together. It's just, it always happens to be me getting picked on here. The pool shark scene, the sign there, I love that. Pool sharks where the customer is our chum. It's beautiful.
And I wrote down all of the pool model names. The Instarust, the Hick Tub, the Lightning Magnet, and the Tinkler. Ooh, the Tinkler.
Hick Tub is my favorite.
Yeah. Growing up in Florida and swimming and everything, I have ingested so much pee in my life. I have no idea why I'm not into that.
That
doesn't make any sense. I grew up in the Y. That's where I went every summer, the free day camp in the Y.
Once you realize it's full of urine, you're just like, well, you either just have to accept that or not. And that was a really good South Park episode about just like, yeah, everybody pees in the pool. It's just Kyle.
I never did. But like everyone else is like, oh, I mean, of course I've done it before, but not on a regular basis.
That was a really great episode of Pete and Pete, actually.
Yeah, which continued the urban legend of they can add a chemical to the pool to detect pee and show.
You're telling me grown ups is a lie?
they lied to you.
In the trailer.
If it turns a different color with pee, I feel like it would also poison you at some point. Like, how can it be non-toxic?
Yeah, there's probably a kid with, like, pee for sweat who would like, have a miserable life.
And it's a great observation that the guy who sells pools would be like, I play keyboards. Like, good question, lady. He's like, no, I'm a keyboard player who just happens to sell pools. Like, that's a lie he tells himself.
He's so annoyed he calls her question lady.
Yeah.
Listen, question lady.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Jerry Cooney, professional boxer and official greeter of Mr. Burns Casino.
Welcome to Mr. Burns Casino. If there's anything I can do to make your visit more enjoyable, please, just let me know.
Yeah, great. See ya.
You're listening to the guys on Talking Simpsons.
Hey, is that bug off?
They build up the pool in a barn-raising scene similar to one in The Witness, which is a Harrison Ford film about Amish people. But I just love this line.
All right, everybody in the pool!
'Tis a fine barn, but sure 'tis no pool, English.
Doweth!
Is it a pool yet?
Yes, Dad.
Woohoo!
That is a great visual misdirect, but it only works once.
Yep.
The first time you see this episode will it work.
What about when he makes a grill?
That was just sequel to this joke. The barn raising was great. It's weird that Lisa didn't catch that the entire time either.
During some part of the process when they're applying the roof to their pool, no one say, this is a barn.
Once it's an A-frame, you should think so. But I love that doeth, and actually, as a kid, I said dough a lot if I made a mistake because Simpsons told me to do that. But to mix things up, then eventually I started doing doeth instead.
Oh. As a good Midwestern boy, I visited Amish country a whole lot.
Oh, I've never
so
been.
I resonated with all these Amish jokes. So rather, they resonated with me.
It's the longest rumspringa ever.
And the second the pool is built, dozens of children have descended upon the Simpsons house.
I can't believe how many times they've done this episode at this point. With Stampy and the trampoline.
Oh, yeah.
They've attracted a ton of strangers to the Simpsons' backyard.
By this time, it should be famous to the Simpsons. famous in Springfield, like, yeah, it's a Simpsons house. They have a crazy thing.
Don't put anything in your backyard. Also, I can't believe the Simpsons are the first residents of Springfield to ever do this.
But this was another thing, another reason my dad didn't want to build a pool. He's just like, I don't want... he's going to have friends. I don't, yes. It's like, I don't want my son to have friends. But really, it was like he didn't want a ton of kids over all the time, but he still got it because we had video games. So fuck you, Dad.
Suck a dick, Mr. Gilbert.
It's the same with like that tragic story I told of my dad not building a swing set because he just didn't want the next door neighbor kid there. And similar deal here, but it is, you know, it's not Marge's job to make them all sandwiches.
No.
She's really being taken advantage of there. And by Bart. Like, Bart is, I love, Miss Cumberdale is such a great fake name.
Cumberdale is great. I want to give that to Oakley or Weinstein.
Yeah, and some of the kids' designs get really weird because they're just like, how many different times can they make this?
And some of them appear to be 10 years older than Bart.
Yes, yeah. And Jimbo gets a lot of fun stuff in here, though he's almost unrecognizable without his hat on.
That's true, yeah.
And meanwhile, Bart doesn't even get to swim once. Doesn't get to get in his pool once this whole summer.
Jump, Bart, jump!
You got it.
He
Hey, Bart, your epidermis is showing.
It is?
Oh. See, epidermis means your hair. So technically, it's true. That's what makes it so funny. Pardon me a moment.
Hey, Nelson, he's really hurt. I think he broke his leg.
I said,
They really did emphasize his broken leg.
It's gross.
In the wrong direction.
In a position I now call the Family Guy fall. Anytime somebody falls, they make sure to, like, no, there's an appendage here that was broken.
Dominic Pulcino totally stole that from me.
Yeah. And Bart got on the roof of his treehouse to discuss the pool safety rules before falling off.
By getting taunted into jumping. And right when it aired, my mom was very, she called it out. She's like, that's too smart for Nelson. He wouldn't know what an epidermis is. It is a classic dork joke to say your epidermis is showing, which means your skin, not your hair.
I looked into this. I thought Nelson was wrong, and that was part of the joke. It does include the hair follicles.
Yeah,
it
what?
It does,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, see, okay.
It would have made way more sense for Martin to say it.
All right.
But here's the thing. I think Nelson just, watched an episode of Bill Nye the Science Guy and found a way to prank Bart. Oh.
No, I think, okay, I swear to you, I had heard this joke before, and I never read hair as meaning epidermis. I think the joke is that Nelson got it wrong.
What's
think,
the dermis?
Yeah, I guess
it's
hair
the
is
skin.
Part, yeah, I yeah, think
hair,
it is
hair. Epidermis is the upper skin.
The hair counts. I looked into it because I thought that was part of the joke, that Nelson still got it wrong and Bart fell for it.
I like it better if Nelson gets it wrong because it is too, it's too urbane
Me
for
too.
Nelson.
But it is a classic bully kind of wordplay prank that I've had similar things not happen to me, but I heard similar things as a kid. Just I actually meant this and it's harmless. So.
And the story of a childhood summer and broken legs, it reminds me of a separate piece, though I don't think they were meant to do it. But you read a separate piece?
No.
It's a story of an asshole who has a fun friend who he tries to destroy who still loves him.
But I did fall off a two-story roof jumping in the pool over the summer, which is something we all did.
Wow.
Climbed the air conditioner to the tree to jump up, and I fell and hit every branch on the way right down, and just I cannot believe how indestructible I was.
Did any of us ever break a limb? I never did. As a coward and a non-active child.
I did, but in a more cowardly way than you not breaking a limb. A girl threw a basketball at me while I was holding a basketball. It hit my finger. My pinky was sandwiched in between the basketball.
Yo.
So something was clearly wrong, and it was swelling to the point where it was noticeable. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't admit a girl broke my finger.
Oh, no.
So it gets worse. I suffer through it for hours in summer camp, and I manufacture a story about a mysterious cowboy who, I'm not kidding, who was walking around strutting his cowboy boots and stepped on my pinky and ringed it. And I'm like, I think he thought it was a cigarette. I made up a lie about a broken bone and made myself suffer forever because I was too embarrassed to let everybody know a girl got the best of me.
You accidentally.
God damn you, Marilyn.
You were attacked by the whipmaster.
It was a Baptist camp.
What about
That's
you,
the
Henry?
Only excuse I
want
had.
To hear about your multiple fractures.
I broke an arm once, actually.
Oh.
It was in the summer of 2000. I was 17 going on 18.
Let's go back.
And, well, my friends and I really got into UFC and MMA, and we decided to, wrestle around.
Look at me, I'm Horse Gracie.
And not, and also not think about how gay it was. It was like, no, we're just rolling around.
Up first.
So we were doing this, and then my friend if this was in a separate piece, then he did it on purpose, but I absolutely don't think he did it on purpose, that he gets me in an arm bar. And he pulls the arm
you watched your arm break.
No, so actually his head, so my left arm is between his two legs, but my head is facing away with his legs on top of my ears. So when my friends hear a very loud crack, I hear more that sound if you crack a knuckle underwater or whatever?
Yeah,
it's much quieter. But my arm can't move anymore.
Oh my God, Henry.
And he immediately lets go of my arm. I'm like, do you think you dislocated? And they're like, I think it's broken, dude.
I think it's really hurt. Let's get out of here.
I want to pull a Henry now.
So they did.
Oh, it's so awful.
They called an ambulance, and one of the hardest things I ever had to do was...
There's been an incident at the Gilbert Place.
Well, so this was also... My mom never forgave me for this because she... Well, this was one of the first times, like, no, my friends who have graduated high school, they just got their own apartment, so I'm going to go hang out with them. And so the first time I'm at a place where a parent isn't, I break my arm... So,
son, was this some sort of Jackass style chicanery?
So I'm like a 30 minute drive away from my family.
Are you listening to the Insane Clown Posse? If you're backyard wrestling, you need to tell me.
So they call 911, and one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life was I wanted the ambulance dudes to pick me up, but they wouldn't do it. They're like, "You got to get up." Okay, with one arm and my other arm feeling like it's in a hole.
You Jack Palance.
I pushed myself up and just like, "Oh, this arm is hanging really weird." And then they put on a fake splint, but I'm still in shock, so I'm not feeling it. They take me to the hospital, and once I get to the hospital and it starts hurting, that's when I'm crying and like, oh fuck, it's really hit me. And also the most pain I've ever been in is when they're like, we're gonna have to move your arm slightly to x-ray it, and like, you're just gonna have to deal with like and I am like in tears and pain.
We're all cringing here in the studio, by the way.
So when your arm is broke, it was the humerus bone, so above the elbow. Uh-oh. And when that breaks, you don't get a cast. You put it in a sling until it knits itself back together. My arm was in a sling for 3 months, and for the 3 months that followed that, I could not bend my elbow.
Atrophied.
My brother joked that I was Bob Dole, and I just could not move
still
it.
Still a topical joke in 2000.
Not dead yet.
And also that there was a huge bruise on my elbow, too. So
oh,
I spent
boy,
at least,
Henry.
I will say, in Bart's case, I actually preferred that it was during the summer, that it was easier to stay indoors and heal during the hardest parts of it instead of going to school and dealing with that injury. And though I still came to school in a sling and spent like until like October in the sling. And I remember the day exactly. It was like 2 days before the first X-Men movie came out, because I remember going, it was the first thing I did with a broken arm.
June 2000.
If only I had Wolverine's powers.
So yes, I have dealt with a broken bone, but never. The nice thing about a broken arm is that like, it is hard, but it is not, you can still walk around. There is a big difference.
So on a lighter topic, that was a great story, by the way. Thanks for sharing.
I've been waiting to tell this story.
I could tell. It was very well told. But Bart becomes weird and isolated in his seclusion from the pool. Well, but I want to say that this was my ideal summer.
Hell yeah.
Every year until I was in high school, I was like, no, no friends. My summer belongs to me.
Yes.
I am going to play board games by myself,
yeah,
read Mad magazines, watch old TV shows, play the same video games over and over. Friends will just get in the way of my time.
Exactly, yeah. It was the summer of an indoor kid who re-watches stuff all the time. That's what you do. And
yeah, so I really enjoyed my isolated and weird summers, and I actually was very much like Principal Skinner. It's like, I'll just go down to the corner store. Let me see, what will I read today? Mad, Cracked, Disney Adventures. I think today I will choose Cracked.
Yes, I did. I love that. It showed me what I love to do as an indoor kid. Of just like, yeah, I'm going to watch every old TV show. I'm going to catch up on all these things. And it's why I was glad once I turned, I think, 13. Until then, my mom would send us to like day camps. But the last year we did it of the YMCA was so bad, of just like full of horrible bullies who were not very nice to me. They're like, okay, Max is just going to, Henry is just going to stay home the whole summer. So
you were known as Max Power then.
Yeah, Max Power. You strap yourself in and feel the G's.
But like, thus begins the real parody of the episode. And I hate that they call this Bart of Dark.
Should be Rear Bart-do.
The last episode was called Secrets of a Successful Marriage. There's a movie called that. You can call this episode Rear Window if you'd like to.
I always confuse the titles Bart of Darkness and Bart After Dark, which is an season 8 episode. I always have to name check it. No, Bart of Darkness is the pool one.
If it's a reference to Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness, it almost makes sense, and I kept looking for meaning.
The horror.
Well, more about the Coppola documentary, which is... For my money, one of the best 5 films of all time, and better than the movie it's about.
The documentary about the making of Apocalypse.
So good.
Now, yes. But before we get there, this is when Bart finds out he's losing his whole summer, or so he thinks.
I'm sorry, that leg's going to have to come off. Did I say leg? I meant that wet bathing suit. I'm afraid you'll need a cast on that broken bone.
Oh, I'm going to miss the whole summer.
Don't worry, boy.
When you get a job like me, you'll miss every summer.
That joke hurts more as a grown-up.
Yeah, as a kid, I was like, oh, no, he's right. Yes, I have to enjoy this time.
But it is sweet seeing Homer go to the ER with Bart. Mm-hmm. Like, the selfish Homer they'd paint in some other episodes, he wouldn't go to the ER with Bart.
Yeah.
But him running next to the gurney with Bart on it actually like made me, oh, that's nice.
Someone get this kid a magazine. Stat.
After Mama's Family's Boy.
And that Hibbert joke was pretty close to the Arrested Development doctor jokes of just like,
oh, right.
He's going to be all right.
All right. I wouldn't take that away. You were. He lost his hand.
We've lost him.
Yeah, we've lost him. Yes, but
yeah, they begin the Rear Window parody.
Yeah, well,
and the Heart of Darkness thing almost works because if you've seen that movie, the madness of a shirtless Francis Ford Coppola is very similar to Bart isolated in his room.
The original Joseph Conrad story is called Heart of Darkness.
It is. But I wanted to see more of that. But it is a very clear Rear Window parody down to the music and everything.
Yeah, I think the
or Disturbia because they're all based on the like what's it called. A Night of Murder or something like that.
Yeah.
An original story. It had to be murder.
Okay, I think... never mind.
By Cornell Woolrich, a 1942 story that Hitchcock made. Rear Window on and Disturbia with Shia LaBeouf is kind of a spiritual remake of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you read about Hitchcock, he was a voracious reader, and all of his movies are based on books or short stories, but...
The Sherry and Terry bit of them saying, like, hey, did you realize the day you got a pool is the day we liked you? And just... Lisa getting to be popular was a really nice thing of just that.
Corrupted immediately.
Yeah, I've been that child. I had been that child too occasionally. Like, oh, am I popular now? I was not.
She truly is the queen of summer in these scenes.
Yeah. And one of my favorite visual gags ever is Millpool.
Yeah.
I love Millpool so much. And also, though, this is so kid-focused, it reminds me more of the Scully seasons where episodes are just like all the kids or it's all about the kids acting like adults, which... Honestly, I'm not the biggest fan of those. They remind me too much of Rugrats.
Yeah, they're a little Rugratsy. I mean, Homer and Marge are there in the background for some gags, but this is really a kid-focused season. I mean, episode, not
still
season.
Still really like those.
And before we get a Rear Window parody, we get a lengthy Esther Williams musical number parody.
I couldn't place the exact musical that was from, but it's funny. I did some research on Esther Williams.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to say The Great Muppet Caper.
What's that?
The Great Muppet Caper, which is a parody.
Well, that's how I got this joke.
Oh, you're
like,
right.
Oh,
Miss Piggy does that.
It's the Miss Piggy song from Great Muppet
and the only scene
to you, Miss Piggy.
The only scene in any Muppet movie where just a little person is in a Miss Piggy outfit, and it is terrifying.
Well,
from a distance, it looks... It's shocking.
As a kid watching it, it was just like, oh, this is fun, the Muppets. And now as an adult, I'm like, they had to get all these Muppets wet for a very involved sequence.
It's crazy. But Esther Williams, of course, it's funny. This can only happen in old Hollywood. It's like, you're a beautiful woman. You're also a professional swimmer. Every movie you will be in will be a swimming-related role.
We already have a movie star ice skater. We don't need
exactly
any more of those.
I mean, she was a beautiful actress and she was a great swimmer. So all of her roles involve swimming in some way. But
it's
the
best workout. She probably looked great.
Oh yeah, I mean, she hurt herself in the movie Million Dollar Mermaid. She took some colossal dive to the water and broke her neck.
Whoa,
and she had to be basically in treatment for 7 months.
My God!
So she was devoted to her craft.
My God, man, that's like Jackie Chan there.
Yeah,
honestly,
go online, look up Esther Williams. You'll find a lot of amazing water choreography, water choreographed dancing. It's amazing.
Also, if you've seen the History of the World Part 1, there's also that during the Tokamada scene, the Inquisition. Well, it becomes an Esther Williams scene as well, but with the nuns. And then Bart watches Itchy and Scratchy, which is a very uneven referencey one, which first it's the cask of Amontillado.
Yeah.
Walling up Itchy.
And this way, this is why we're better than the wikis. Because your limited minds attribute this to Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Nothing in here that relates to... If anything, they look like the heads of the people from To Serve Man, a previous... Simpsons
but,
Halloween episode,
yeah,
Twilight Zone.
A Star Trek reference.
I thought that too, Henry.
From the first episode of Star Trek, which is both an adaptation of an unused pilot for Star Trek called The Cage, but also turned into a two-parter called The Menagerie, the first episodes of it.
How does that work? I thought this was from the not-used pilot for Star Trek.
Well, yes. So, boy, this is a long story, but that Gene Roddenberry wanted to make the show Star Trek starring a guy called Captain Pike, not Captain Kirk.
Right.
And so he filmed a pilot of that on the Desilu Studios, but they didn't make that one. They wanted him to rework it. So then as he's working, he gets that pilot sold for the regular Star Trek, with Shatner in it, he's got this footage from this pilot. And as they're getting farther into season one, they're like, production wise, we need to save some money. And so he's like, okay, if I write an episode where that basically is Kirk and Spock watching the pilot and then incorporating that into a story, then it becomes that. So the cage was where Captain Pike is being kept, and then the bad things happen to him, and then in the menagerie they are watching it in his trial about what happened. And
are the brains that size as
so
well?
So they're on Talos IV, and the people with the big brains are the Talosians.
Very aptly named, because they live on Talos.
So they keep them. They keep humans captive. They keep aliens captive, and they're just like, yeah, we're going to test you. We're much smarter than you. And they talk telepathically. Their brains don't make that. They just telepathically talk into your brains and have telepathic powers like throwing.
That might be Planet of the Apes, right?
That might be it.
I think you might agree with me. This could be the most violent Itchy and Scratchy.
Yeah,
I mean,
really is.
Him getting caught in the escalator and getting his skin ripped off is violent, but him getting chopped into pieces methodically.
Yeah. Blood everywhere. And after they put him and you in a false sense of security, like, oh, he's finally getting to rest.
They dress him, wash him.
That simple phenomenon, I forget, somebody... There's a word for it, but like, say if Freddy Krueger is killing the shit out of somebody, and you remove Freddy Krueger from that situation, all you see is dismemberment and limbs and blood, because there's nothing to block anything. And that's why this is so disturbing to me. It's just a cat being dismembered.
We should also say it's a Jim Reardon episode, It looks amazing. And again, they had extra time to work on this episode. So the scenes in Bart's room, there's an extra layer of shadows on everything, which costs extra money. It's an extra cell layer.
I loved how that looked. We have talked a billion times about him in marketing. Bart appears in a blue shirt. And in the show, he appears in an orange shirt. And the lighting is just such where it's both colors. That sequence.
The way Scratchy's head is split in half at the end is like, Jesus, this is a bit much.
We are lucky to have seen this.
So Bart is ready for the summertime of doing what all of us would have done of just, I'm going to watch TV all summer. I'm going to watch every episode of One Day at a Time all summer.
I mean, this is me. I was watching, I saw the entire run of the Beverly Hillbillies. I Love Lucy, Happy Days, which I hated, Gomer Pyle, Andy Griffith Show. I was there in the summer.
I was sent away for summer, so.
You know, this isn't so bad. I'll just spend the summer getting better acquainted with an old friend called television.
Hope you enjoyed that, kids, because Krusty's out of here for the summer. In the meantime, we'll be running Classic Krusty. Enjoy!
Smoking on TV.
Good evening. Tonight my guest is AFL-CIO Chairman George Meany, who will be discussing collective bargaining agreements.
It's a pleasure to be here, Krusty.
Let me be blunt. Is there a labor crisis in America today?
Well, that depends what you mean by crisis.
Sounds like Dr. Wily. Yes,
It's Joe Lieberman.
I believe that Krusty's set is made to look like the Jack Parr version of The Tonight Show, which was actually the second Tonight Show. First was with Steve Allen.
Yes.
But I actually have a clip of George Meany. AFL-CIO was one of the biggest labor organizations in America, and he was one of the greatest known labor leaders in America.
Back when unions did something. Like he was a labor leader for decades.
But this is from the program Longines Chronoscope, and Longines was the sponsor, a watch company. And I have one more thing to drop on you when this clip is over. So we'll hear George Meany in a second.
Now, sir, first of all, why did the AFL see fit this year to endorse the candidacy of Governor Stevenson?
Here's George.
Well, of course, the American Federation of Labor has been interested in the political scene for many years because of the fact that, to a large extent, the conditions under which we work can be determined by legislation.
But, sir, what difference is there between 1952 and 1948?
Okay, thanks enough. Well,
play all of it.
He's not quite as marble mouth as Harry Shearer's.
I never realized he's doing an action. He is doing a bit of an impression.
Yeah, well,
that design is very close to the drawing of him in the show. I just assumed George Meany sounded like a fake name.
He's a real guy. And so Longines is the sponsor. This unlocked a new reference for me in my head. In the They Might Be Giants song, like the Longines Symphonate, It Doesn't Rest, the Longines Symphonate was a radio program that would play symphonic music sponsored by Longines, the watch company.
That's what that lyric means.
There you go.
I grew up loving They Might Be Giants. Sometimes I get mad, like, how was I ever supposed to get that asshole?
Yes, and it was a radio show from just the 50s. It only existed in the 50s. So,
I mean, that's why They Might Be Giants makes
from Birdhouse in
music
your soul.
For Dorcos. Ugh, like, that's who
they're
for.
They're my favorite.
I love them, and yeah, also that Birdhouse in Your Soul is a great karaoke song, or at least it's always
I always do it because... Yeah. The singer has no range, and neither do I.
Blue Canary in the Outlet by the Light Switch.
Bart is going to be damned to watch all this, and this is a return to casting Krusty as The Tonight Show. They hadn't done that in a little while since The Tonight Show writers had left the show.
Yeah, they kind of forgot that was an old joke they used with Krusty.
I'm a little tired of saying in 30-20-10, but I feel like I always have to reinforce that. We do a show called 30-20-10 about 30, 20, and 10 years ago, mostly what the pop culture media landscape looks like. In 1987, this joke isn't far-fetched. Everybody is like pulled the Flintstones whistle and stopped making television. It was reruns. It was like Bob Hope specials that were produced cheaply and quickly.
You'd get like one or two specials a week, and some of them were just like, we're watching fireworks. Come if you want.
It's like, and here we are in July. We're like, I have too much to watch. There's too much new shit. What do I watch, Glow or Kimmy Schmidt? I don't know which one to watch.
In 1 month, Netflix dropped it as like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, House of Cards season, and Glow on top.
But it's a joke that doesn't work the same way anymore, that a kid being excited, I can sit back and watch TV all summer. If you didn't have Nickelodeon, you were fucked. There's nothing to watch.
I like the brazenness of a channel too, like, we're gonna show a black and white rerun. You will never see black and white television as just tossed off unless you're going to a channel that is specifically you're watching black and white stuff.
It's like
no company
only
would want to show you
that. You have to find that. And so one more thing. So canonically, we learned from I Love Lisa, Krusty started in 1963. The episode was written in 1992, and that was his 29th anniversary special.
Hey.
This episode is from 1961, which makes things out of whack a bit.
Well, I hope someone got
fired for that one.
Yeah.
Homer thinks he's in the blob, and so then he's added so much chlorine that it's poisoning children. And like, if I don't care how popular Lisa is in his pool, like, they go like, well, I'm not coming back. It literally bleaches Milhouse's hair white.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Like, that's how harsh the
chlorine, eh?
I have to think Homer learned the chlorine balance better after the first day.
I never, ever, ever want to bore anyone with that again. But when you first shock a pool, you pour in a lethal amount of chlorine, and you're not allowed to swim in it for a few days. That is part of the process of taking care of a stupid pool.
You need one of those little pH readers, too. Yeah. Like, what color is it at? Yeah.
You pour in way too much to kill everything to then make it easier to clean out again. And if Homer followed the directions to a T, it would harm every child who jumped in within the next hour.
They'll call me weird. I love the smell of a chlorine pool. It's
heartwarming. It's very nostalgic for me.
Especially for me, a nostalgic feeling I have is when it's an indoor chlorine pool, too. Mm. Just like,
I just remember smelling that smell, trying to beat Mike Tyson's punch out with a hat that had the logo on it.
Then Bart, because he doesn't have video games, it's wrong that he's just doing all the stuff like, well, he'd just be playing video games. He should have his Game Boy out.
Yeah, I feel like he's had video games before. He should be playing a lot of games. But
It seems like they... At least at this point, they seem like they only have the rule of, like, you play video games in the living room. You don't get it in your room.
Yeah.
That was my parents' rule.
Yeah. It's a big deal when they let Lisa play Crash Bandicoot, not really, in her bedroom when she's sick. So
My mother just reminded me of this, because I would steal TVs off the side of the road and fix them, because they wouldn't let me have a TV in my room, but I was able to hide televisions in my room, and they knew when I'd done that, because they can't really punish me for, like, how the fuck did you get a free TV?
Did you talk to Sally Struthers again?
It was usually walking around a rich neighborhood finding it, like, I don't want this anymore, and I just fucking take it, put it on
this
put it
TV
on my...
is too small.
And I would steal a lot of black and white TVs, and they'd know when the video game system was gone that I found another television, when it was, because where else would it be?
It got stolen by the TV
Jim, would you get up here? He hollowed out the credenza and tried to hide the television in it. Don't try putting a lock on that, Mr. Little Chris.
Parents knew that TV and video games were a reliable babysitter, and they did not want to break that trend.
Meanwhile, Bart's playing Stratego alone, which, like, I'd play Stratego if I had to at, like, a day camp.
I've never learned.
That wasn't Risk?
No, it was Stratego.
Okay, I never played Stratego.
Oh, you never played Stratego? No. Risk is a much bigger map than that. Stratego, you have two sides of pieces, red and blue, and the guy on one side can see what every piece is, and they have different actions. It's kind of like playing... It's kind of like playing chess, except you don't know if something's a bishop or a knight.
Like mastermind or battleship.
And so you go like, well, I'm going to attack this one. Well, it was a bomb. Ha ha. Yeah. And so, yeah.
I mean, classic Lonely Child situation. I would play board games alone and then make up my own rules to make a single player game.
To this day, I've never played when you tell me if I land on free parking in Monopoly, you don't get $500. I'm like, how the fuck did you learn how to play this?
I'd rather read a comic book than start playing a game by myself. That's what I was going to do. But I'm very particular about Monopoly rules too. But I'm very by the book. I'm like, it's what it says in here. I don't give a shit about your house rules.
Do you have an auction on a property if someone doesn't buy it? That I learned through the NES game. Oh, that's a rule of Monopoly. We just let the game go instead of tying things up for hours.
No idea.
We do the auction. It's like free parking. Your money goes there. If anything you pay, we were very particular about that, and it led to some very angry game playing. I also love the animation on Bart's deadpan. Look at Lisa, and she's like, it's not so great. Bart not only is getting weirder by being alone, but he also is getting smarter. He is letting he's spending the summer with his brain.
It's the best acting I think we've seen from Bart outside of where he's a kid and he has to plead for things or cry.
It's very well observed of the weird kid who spends too much time alone and what that does to you, and that I was that kid too. Mm-hmm. Like, I did those things. And but Lisa has a nice little gift for Bart.
Look, it's a telescope I won at the Optics Festival.
It was an optics festival, and I wasn't informed. You go now.
But
go! What have we here? A lighter side of hippies. They don't care whose toes they step on.
I love the metaphor.
this was the era, I guess Bob's with me on this, thank God, where I fell in love with Mad Magazine.
Late 80s, early to late 90s, I was a heavy reader of Mad Magazine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And inexplicably, Dave Berg was still drawing comics, the lighter side of, and his sense of humor was stuck in like 1967. Everyone was dressed like it was 1967. Mm-hmm. There were bad jokes and lawyer jokes.
The main character always had a pipe in his mouth. This is the 90s.
Yeah.
It's only slightly removed from Gene, the Onion comic strip guy.
Yeah. And in later Mad Magazines, they would actually publish those again, but add new dialogue to make them edgier.
Yes. I didn't like that.
Better for worse style? That's a terrible reference.
Here's the thing. Bart is reading Mad Magazine, and the cover says NYPD Blech. The real NYPD Blue parody would come out that summer in Mad Magazine, and it was called NYPD Boobs.
They got to do something with the nudity.
We used to do a quiz on our other podcast about can you try and guess the Mad Magazine parody, and you usually can.
Yeah. Mm. And one other thing that startled and surprised me doing research on this, NYPD Blue, I was like, oh, it was on in the 90s, and they showed Dennis Franz's butt. Who cares? It was on for 12 seasons. It stopped in 2005.
Holy shit.
I didn't know.
I had no idea.
You were putting misleading Simpsons information on the web.
Well, it was...
on my No Homers Club.
It wasn't just Dennis Franz's butt. There were more butts. There were butts you wanted to see, too.
I mean, Dennis Franz's butt was the joke every sitcom made, even The Simpsons.
But they built up to that. Yeah. They broke the... they were the Jackie Robinson of Dickhead. For network television,
I wonder if that show holds up with The Shield and The Wire in existence. Can you go back to NYPD Blue?
If you had enough created headspace to make 12 seasons of a network show,
I would like to go back to the first seasons, because Dennis Franz's Sipowicz character was pretty much the spiritual child of David Milch, who was one of the main writers on the show, but not the creator. And David Milch would go on to make Deadwood.
An amazing
show. And Deadwood
show.
Is just his mind. Yeah. You watch their writer's room thing. He's surrounded by the writers who were doing a great job. And then he's like, no, then the guy would say this. And he would just spit out like this Western Shakespeare line, just seemingly off the top of his head, like, who the fuck are you?
He's a mad genius.
I love that man. Go back to a couple episodes ago where I can yell about how much I like John from Cincinnati, the Twin Peaks for the fucking 2000s.
And I think the other parody that they did on Brother from Another Planet was NYPD Shoe.
Oh, yeah.
Was that
this NYPD Shoe sketch.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing. And also an optics festival is bird watching. That's what an optics festival is.
It was a good observation of Bart's demented attitude, where he was like, I need to find a way that this is a slight against me. I would not enjoy the optics festival. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't like being there at all, but the fact that I wasn't included with a working leg, I take great offense to this.
You're an angry victim child who's lashing out at people being nice to you. maybe I did that.
And we do have a nice continuous swimming naked.
Yes. I remember that in the commercials. Like,
that was the number the number one commercial joke for this episode was the continue swimming naked.
But it didn't go all the way to the open fire.
And
then
continue.
That Lou nods his head like, yep, I'm going to start shooting at him.
I wonder if they at least fired a warning shot and the Simpsons fled.
But it is, it's, I like that. That is something I never got to enjoy of owning our own pool. Of just like I could not privately skinny dip and enjoy it. It's just.
I did much later in life. When
I did it constantly. I told the story recently on a show. I was skinny dipping, and as boys do, you start wrestling, and we just had that moment of our dicks touching and like freaking a gay panic.
Yeah,
wouldn't trade it for anything.
Classic gladiator style combat.
Glad we could have space docked like that.
But so Bart has magical telescope luck, as we'll also see in Bart's Comet later in this season, that Bart will see everything nobody gets to see in telescopes. Telescopes are boring until you see the one cool thing, but he sees a spaceship.
That might be my favorite part of this whole episode. Because it's one is, wow, the universe is so boring.
I love that. Yeah, he's just seeing everything expand in front of him.
But what that sequence looks like is a placemat I ate off of as a 5-year-old.
Oh, wow.
Every single cosmic phenomenon stuck on a placemat with all the planets around it. That's what Bart saw and couldn't give less of a shit.
I remember my placemat as a kid was a Sesame Street one. It was just all my Sesame Street pals saying, enjoy your meal. Then the Rear Window stuff finally begins in earnest.
Oh, that's like, why you guys didn't want to talk about it. It hadn't happened yet.
Well, so Bart sees first that Skinner apparently spends his entire summer sharpening pencils.
I love that because they only touched upon it briefly with Otto. But now that I know a bunch of teachers, like, you got to find more different work. You're lucky enough to be principal, you might be paid throughout the year. But otherwise, you got to have a summer job.
Ugh, that's how shitty we do to teachers. Like, we're already paying them garbage. Can you just pay them in the summer?
Yeah, a lot of people, I don't have those stories, but like, you'll go to the grocery store and you'll see your, hey, my teacher's here bagging the groceries. Summer job, baby.
And then I wonder what show Hibbert was watching. It's not a broad enough parody.
Turns
like,
out it was the Evil Twin.
Like, was that Martin? Was that Seinfeld?
I thought it was Who's the Boss.
That sounds like a Who's
it
the
sounded
Boss
like
line.
A Tony Danza kind of line.
But the voice was really high pitched. It was sort of like a Moe-ish
no,
voice.
No, I agree. I don't know what else it could have been.
Maybe
but like,
bad stand-up comedy or something? I don't know.
And just like in Lady Bouvier, I feel that Merkin is punishing people for explicitly referencing something because it is Rear Window, and then Bart then looks
so
in
good.
On Jimmy Stewart.
Right. A sinister looking kid.
I mean, Grace.
He calls for Grace, not Lisa, the character's name.
Which is the character's name in the movie, yeah.
I mean, we should talk about Rear Window.
Sure.
I don't need to tell you that Rear Window is great.
Yep.
If it's ever playing in a theater, and it probably isn't if you don't live in a major city, go see it because this is it's not my favorite Hitchcock movie. It's a movie I've seen most in a theater because every viewing on a huge screen, you could be like, I'm going to look in that window for most of the movie. You'll catch something different, some new activity. Like, the set itself is glorious.
Yeah.
And the choreography of getting all the actors like hundreds of feet away from each other to work in unison on one set to create a convincing reality is just astounding. Like, he made it work.
No, it's beautiful. I need to see it on a big screen. I've only seen it on a TV screen, which is not how it's meant to be seen.
Was that one of the 30-20-10 responses? Was that the creator of the Chipmunks is one of the dudes in the window?
Yes, Ross Bagdasarian is the guy who is writing a song throughout the movie. And in the end, it's a song that Jimmy Stewart and Grace Kelly dance to when his leg heals.
Wow. Yeah,
and we have the trailer. Let's play part of it. I queued it up to where it gets interesting.
This is the apartment of a man named Jeffries, a news photographer whose beat used to be the world. Right now, his world has shrunk down to the size of this window. He's been watching the people across the way. Nobody seems to pull their blinds during a hot spell like this. He knows a lot about them by now. Too much, perhaps. For instance, down there on the second floor, the woman pacing about. He calls her Miss Lonely Hearts. So lonely that even death seems like a friend.
Jeez.
These are the newlyweds on a honeymoon no one will ever forget. He calls her Miss Hearing Aid, an artist of a very odd and strange art. The songwriter who plays the same melody over and over again.
There he is.
It's Dave Seville.
A genius or insane?
Insane, we found out.
He didn't.
Alvin!
That's the guy.
It's true. But yeah, I mean, I don't need to tell you it's a good movie, but it is a great movie, and it is filmed from the main character's perspective. Not in the first person, of course, but you only see what is possible for him to see.
Yes.
So it's frustrating as a viewer to be like, what's happening in that window? But when you're watching it in the beautiful... I don't know what the aspect ratio is. I think it's like 2.35 to 1 or 2.85 to 1. Just like there's so much happening on the screen, but there's something happening all over the screen, but it's not distracting.
It's one of the most interesting sets ever built, I think, going to Universal Studios when it first opened. They had you walk into the Hitchcock exhibit, which is literally Minion Mayhem now.
Sad.
It became Terminator 2 and Minion Mayhem. But again, that's the trajectory of what's popular. But like you walk in and like this is how the Rear Window set looked, and like I remember, I'll never forget that they had projections of people in the windows. So obviously they're not going to pay actors to be there every 10 minutes. Mm. But it was so awesome to see how they made that film.
I also remember that they showed how did Hitchcock film going through this window? Yeah. It's like, well, the window broke apart. Mm-hmm. Rear Window is so fantastic. It shows. It's all about voyeurism, which is all Hitchcock films are about in general, but this one is his most voyeuristic, and that Jimmy Stewart, like, a pretty good job for him. He gets to sit down most of the movie.
He's one of my favorite actors of all time. There's, like, at least 10 Hitchcock movies that will never not be interesting, and this is way up there.
And if you're into babes, Grace Kelly has never been hotter in any movie. She is amazing, and you're like, why is she dating this old man?
Is she in High Noon? Is that her?
I think she is in High Noon. It was one of her first movies.
She was one of the first people, like, who is oldest, like this was 50 years ago and this is the hottest person I've ever seen.
And it's not just that they drew Jimmy Stewart into the show in his Rear Window costume. It's
yelling
that,
at Grace Kelly.
It's that behind him too, it's his apartment. Even some of the photos we just saw in that trailer are drawn behind him.
That's right.
It doesn't make me wonder that, like, are they officially now acknowledging that little Chris is watching is not going to get this joke unless they're very specific?
No, like Henry said, I think they're punishing the writers for being like, you think you're so clever. We're going to tell the audience this is exactly what you're doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I think. It was nice to see the series go back to Hitchcock. They did a million Hitchcock references in the first four seasons. But I think that is a difference. I think that is a difference in the Merkin years versus the Al Jean and Reese years. The Al Jean and Reese were just like, a movie scene is going to happen. If you know it's from The Godfather, it's fun, but we hope it's fun either way. In the Merkin season, he's like, you're going to do a scene from Godfather, and then I will have somebody say, like, that was in The Godfather, you're sued, or whatever.
I represent the state of Charlie Chaplin.
Exactly.
But also, the parody is important to the plot itself. It's not just a throwaway visual or a throwaway reference.
It's not like, say, on The Critic, where a scene from Do the Right Thing happens for no reason.
You found my trash can.
Or in Principal Charming, where the vertigo camera pull is done in the school bell tower for no reason.
Or what was that episode from like the third season where just there's a Hitchcock reference and then Alfred Hitchcock walks by the scene.
Oh, it was the...
It was birds in the...
Just
in
to remind you.
Streetcar Named Marge,
But so Bart finally does hear something interesting. And I just love, he hears a woman scream, and I love the way they animate him grabbing the box with his foot. Like, it's another just awesome animation.
Oh, Jim Reardon is on his game in this episode.
This can't be what it looks like. There's got to be some other explanation.
I wish there was some other explanation for this, but there isn't. I'm a murderer.
Then that's not the real Ned Flanders.
I'm a murdiddly erdler!
If that's not Flanders, he's done his homework.
So that's my favorite thing of this whole episode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought that was so clever.
Murdiddly erdler.
I know this looks like something else, but it isn't. Yeah. But it's really
give
funny.
That line of the show.
It's filmed very well. Oh, it feels so good. I don't know why. I felt like I was tugging at my heart, and then you put it out there, and relaxed.
Bart is speaking to the audience of just like, you as a viewer are like, well, no, Ned definitely didn't kill his wife. So Ned has to outright say, like, no, I am a murderer. I did it.
Yeah.
It makes so little sense how the ending is.
He's speaking for the benefit of an audience he doesn't know is there. Yeah. Which
totally.
Is such an arch
joke. If
that's
not Flanders, he's done his homework, which is a very clever way to say, like, I don't know, just acknowledge exactly what the audience is thinking.
Yes. And there's the great joke of Bart turning back on classic Krusty. It's from the 60s later when it's a psychedelic show, and Ravi Shankar is on there, which That is such a Beatles fan joke. Like, no American has heard of Ravi Shankar unless it was through the Beatles or Beatles-associated products.
Does he mispronounce it?
Yeah. Yes. That was an actual mistake in the booth, and Harry Shearer corrected him, voicing Ravi Shankar.
Yeah, that's great.
And respond with groovy.
And he's the father of Nelly Furtado, by the way.
Really?
Right. Yeah.
The one who's like a bird?
Yes. That song's only 20 years old now. But yeah, the Ravi Shankar.
Just flexing.
I know this as a... I've talked about the concert for Bangladesh a million times, but I always think of Ravi Shankar on there of just that George Harrison kind of punished the audience. Like, I know you came here for a rock show, but you're hearing music from the region. Ravi Shankar is going to just play it, and you're going to listen. Like, this is, you better eat your vegetables if you want to hear me play music.
Yeah, and Like Father, Like Clown, that's the album Krusty puts on to pad out the time at The Simpsons to stay with the family longer.
Yeah.
When we talked to Dan, our buddy Dan Amrick, who's Palette Swap Ninja Band, remade all of, oh my God, why am I losing this?
Sergeant Pepper's.
Lonely Hearts Club Band in a Star Wars parody called Princess Leia.
That was part of the title.
The Princess Leia still on Death Star plans.
Yes.
But there's a giant sitar solo in the middle. Is that him playing?
Yeah, I think so.
That Dan had to recreate on his own.
Wow, how did he do that, man?
I don't know. Just a little plug there, palaceswapninja.com. You want to hear the coolest Beatles parody of all time.
And that woman's scream was Tress McNeil, obviously. That was not Harry Shearer.
But that would establish a character trait for Ned.
Would.
In a few episodes, we would hear him singing with a woman's voice.
Yeah.
And much later, we hear him screaming bloody murder in the woman's voice as well.
I kind of miss that trait of him, but now all I can think of is Ned's traits is from where Maud dies, is that like, oh yeah, that Ned has a 14-inch penis. Like,
yeah, Ned is an incredibly buff
and
man.
And 70.
With a monster dong and a woman scream.
And a butt that just won't quit.
But when you know the ending of this, this line makes no sense.
I love how contrived it is. Like, again, Ned is speaking for the benefit of us to build this fake mystery.
Daddy, where's Mommy? We miss her.
Mommy had to go away. She's with God now.
Yay! Can we go there too?
Soon enough.
Yay!
I mean...
He's gonna kill Rod and Todd too. That's horrible. In principle.
You could read it as Ned is still dealing with the guilt of killing the ficus.
Yeah.
And he's thinking about when Maud will come back and what he'll have to tell her. So there's
this gloom over him. Yeah. But also,
my best friend lived next door to a preacher, and like, he did say shit like that all the time.
But he's not going to send his kids to grandma. When Maud comes back, she's just there. They don't get sent to be at the... Or no, it's not to grandma. They're not going to get sent to where Maud was at Bible camp.
Well, soon enough, it's just like maybe next summer, maybe next year. Who knows?
Yes, it really makes this.
Yeah.
This is a big difference in Rear Window and Bart's Rear Window is that Jimmy Stewart can't hear everybody.
Yeah.
He is far enough away that he can't hear stuff, but it's funnier if Bart can hear things he shouldn't be able to hear.
It's, and that Flanders isn't ambiguously narrating everything.
I mean, at least Flanders is right next door, so that makes sense. Mm. But and then came one of my favorite lines of the episode. I just love it. It's so poor little Ralph. I had many things stolen from me when I went to the YMCA in the pool. So a public pool plus thievery makes sense to me.
Look, Lisa, I found this change on the bottom of the pool. You can have it.
Thanks, Nelson.
Somebody took my juice money.
Whoa.
It's not even it's just tragic. There's no funny Ralph lines. Like, somebody robbed me.
This is really dumb, but I remember watching this expecting him to say milk money. Mm-hmm. But it's summer, and no child would ever put aside money for milk.
You don't want to have dairy products and then
nobody
swim.
Does.
No.
Milk was a bad choice.
You're asking for a cramp.
But I can definitely see, you know, Wiggum say like, well, you're going out for the day. Here's 50 cents.
Yeah,
buy
the boy's
yourself
juice
some
money.
Juice. Yeah. And then the rich kid talking to Lisa and trying to like pick her up, basically. I like to imagine that kid grew up to be Hugh Parkfield.
Yeah. Or every writer of The Simpsons.
Yeah. He is a very... I mean, this was the era of Hugh Grant's romantic comedies, right?
He did look too specifically designed not to be based on a real person.
Ever so many romantic misunderstandings.
Yes.
I do enjoy that Lisa is immediately hoisted by her own petard. Like,
say that word?
Yes, I can say it. I'm petarded, so I can say it. But, Lisa, as soon as she indulges in just turning her brain off, it's all over.
Yes. And
you deserve an award for that joke.
Thank you.
What she didn't realize is that an even wussier kid is even getting a bigger pool.
fruition. Soon I'll be queen of summertime. Oh, king, king!
And it is a nice touch that Martin's pool is bigger and it has a deck. Yeah. And speaking as like a white trash former pool owner or pool user, we just had a fucking ladder we took out of the pool so no one could die in it when we weren't using it.
Bob, I've been to pools, above ground pools with no ladder. I've seen the worst.
You got to vault into it.
Yeah. No, Martin's pool.
Use the trampoline.
Martin's pool is like $1 million pool. That is a
monster pool. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is a full deck construction around a pool. Mm-hmm. And it's
the water level is so low without all the children, Lisa just gets stuck in the pool with her brain. Mm-hmm. It's like, now it's just you and me.
Yeah, that I like to imagine that she tied together some of the pool toys that were in there to pull herself out.
Lisa can figure it out. I mean, she has to help Bart later in the episode.
And I totally forgot that this was the episode where something ribald was mentioned.
Listen, Ned Flanders murdered his wife.
But why? She's such a fox. I mean, what's on Fox tonight? Something ribald, no doubt.
I wish you'd stop spreading bad rumors about people. Remember how you got Grandpa tarred and feathered?
Sure, that was 20 minutes ago.
Gonna be in the tub for a while.
God damn, that's such a fucking great joke.
Somehow that happened. Bart was able to do that in a cast from his room while dealing with the Ned Flanders situation.
It was. I love the resignation of Abe. Just like, gotta be in the tub for a while.
I don't know. That's a perfect scene. God and damn, I love The Simpsons.
We last heard of Homer's lust for Maude in the Homer Loves Flanders episode, where he was like, oh, she's got a thing for me, but she hides under a mask of low-key hostility.
And I also like this line, this scene, and also the 911 thing. It explains why Bart didn't go to the cops, or just like that he did tell his family and nobody believed him. Mm-hmm. So, but that at least gave him the excuse.
You don't have a clip of this, Henry, but I do want to mention Bart's play, his terrible British play. I don't know how he picked this up.
Like he was intentionally writing a bad, annoying play.
I mean, in the summertime, I watched a lot of PBS as a lonely kid, watched a lot of Red Dwarf, but I found out St. Swithin's Day is a real thing.
Yeah, I was shocked to find this out, too. It's a summer holiday.
Yeah, it's July 15th. You don't want to know who St. Swithin's was, but apparently the lore goes, the weather on St. Swithin's Day will continue for the next 40 days, which of course is not true in any way, but
never happened.
That's the belief.
Yes, if he sees his shadow.
So, kip us for breakfast, Mom.
Tease, replied Anna.
Here, let me read to you from my play. Kip us for breakfast, Aunt Helga. Is it St. Swithin's Day already? Tis, replied Aunt Helga.
I'm going.
Well, that also reminded me of my childhood in the summer of one summer I got a typewriter from my mom's work. They're like, I'm getting rid of this typewriter. And I was like, I could write anything I want. It was that magical moment of creativity of realizing like, oh, I could write anything. It's one of those things I like being about a writer, except then I realized like, oh, writing's hard and I don't like doing it.
I'm going to go back and look for it, but I wrote a comic book at Bart's age.
Wow.
Inspired by the design of The Simpsons. And is it Mort Drucker from the Mad Magazine?
Mort Drucker, yeah.
With a giant nose people. So they look like The Simpsons with a big, giant, like, tick-like... Full tick like nose.
We think of John Caldwell,
and it was Slugman, and it is literally the Radioactive Man origin story, which I thought I wasn't inspired by, but my dad my dad brings it up every time I come home that I tried to make a comic character called Slugman.
I drew comic strips about Fox characters that were in no way similar to Garfield, and they weren't drawn in the same way.
I didn't write plays. What I did was this could predict my future Tuesdays. Life as a podcaster, but I did have a tape recorder and I would record my own radio plays, and I would use the sound test on Nintendo games to edit in music.
Holy shit.
Which, thank you, Street Fighter 2, that Wedding March song gave me so much comedy.
Mario Paint let you score your whole soundtrack with cats.
I did that a few times too. It was one of the good jokes on Family Guy was Stewie revealing the tape recorder radio show he had made. I'm like, yeah, I did that.
That is a Family Guy joke I love.
It was really good. It was a well-observed thing about people, not just cutting to a movie.
You want to compliment this episode on its Rear Window parody again?
Yes, yes. Well, hey, they recognize it and subvert it.
They earned it.
But Lisa and Bart kind of go on like a Gravity Falls style adventure of just twins.
Of it like that.
It's something I got into too of hearing like Alex Hirsch, the creator of Gravity Falls, big Simpsons fan.
Great show.
And he was such a big Simpsons fan, he hired Josh Weinstein to write on Gravity Falls.
Mm. You're right. Can you play the clip of the 911 call though?
Because I love this.
An axe. He's got an axe. I'll save you, Lisa. I'll save you by calling the police.
Hello, and welcome to the Springfield Police Department Rescue Phone. If you know the name of the felony being committed, press 1. To choose from a list of felonies, press 2. If you are being murdered or are calling from a rotary phone, please stay on the line. You have selected regicide. If you know the name of the king or queen being murdered, press 1.
Sounds like hands up everyone in the audience who learned the word regicide.
Oh, right
this
here.
Episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jesus Christ.
It sounds like Bart needs a dialing wand, but this is a parody of Movie Phone.
Yes.
Which was parodied a lot in the 90s. It was never a thing in my town.
Me neither.
And it's hard to find a recording of Movie Phone because it rebranded itself as a new thing.
Yeah, nobody just taped a Movie Phone as far as I couldn't find clips either. Like, it was so frustrating. The closest thing I could find is my favorite parody of Movie Phone.
There has to be tapes or you never would have heard it.
But this one from Seinfeld.
Hello, and welcome to Movie Phone, brought to you by the New York Times and Hot 97. Coming to theaters this Friday, Kevin Bacon, Susan Sarandon. You've got to get me over that mountain! Now! There's no higher place than Mountain High. Rated R. If you know that.
Okay. So the so one good. Other Movie Phone reference I remember, and this was a popular reference in the 90s because people in these big cities, it was just a thing. You would call Movie Phone. It was 777 film. You would get all the times. There's a cut scene in the first Austin Powers movie with Sherry O'Terry playing a stewardess, and he's hitting on her, and he asks for her number, and she gives him the Movie Phone number. And I'm guessing they cut that scene because nobody knew what Movie Phone was outside of New York, LA, Chicago.
It's a big city shit thing, and like... We had at least a local movie theater guy. They hired a radio guy to announce movie times at the Cinemark.
Yeah. I remember being in the summer, especially just like, okay, it's time to see a movie today. Open up the paper. I know exactly where the movie times are on this newspaper.
If you don't have the paper, you could call a toll-free. You could call,
yeah, I did have
so
a toll-free.
So old. You could call a toll-free number.
AMC Theater. Actually, I called into the AMC Theater one. And then when I worked at AMC Theater, I got to see the people who changed out the tapes of like, no, they got to change out the message.
I've said this story on it's the foundation of starting a podcast, but when I was this year, when my parents would take me on vacations to Arizona and the Grand Tetons, boring, I would just call 1-800-USA-SEGA to listen to a person tell me what Sega games might be coming out in the next 3 years.
Video games still exist, Chris. Don't worry. This vacation is really boring.
Do you recognize that music?
Aquatic suit, yes!
That's Sonic the Hedgehog, and he's got a new adventure coming. Like, that's... God, I would call and just listen
just
to that.
Just to be reminded that video games exist.
Oh, God, at least they're not mountains.
Well, the scene coming up where Lisa infiltrates Flanders' house is directly out of Rear Window where Grace Kelly, in a dress and pearls and heels, breaks into the killer's apartment to find things. And it is an extremely tense and well-done scene because Jimmy Stewart's character can't communicate with her, and he sees the killer enter the apartment. Spoilers, the guy killed his wife.
It's so beautifully intense. It's like, oh, God, it's...
All they can do is like increase the sweat count, the sweat beads on Jimmy Stewart's head.
Yeah, they spray him down with every new cut.
And as Bob has pointed out, her name was Lisa, so he was watching the character named Lisa go through there, both in Rear Window and in The Simpsons.
And I think the song Ross Bagdasarian writes is called Mona Lisa.
Oh, yeah. That human head of lettuce line was a bit cheap, but it was fine.
It's
but
very much like the joke from the Kang and Kodos first episode.
How to cook 4 for 40
Yeah, humans. They wiped the dust off.
Yes, the two serve man parody.
There's more space dust on here.
And the Reardon team really did an amazing job on the Rear Window references. My favorite one is like the zoom in on Bart's eye moving into the telescope. Like, this is straight. Like, it's so perfectly done.
What isn't a Rear Window reference, but also very well animated, is the scene. So Lisa breaks into Flanders' house. He's in there. She has to go to the attic to hide. The scene of her jumping for the knob on the drawstring for the attic door is so well animated.
Oh, yeah.
It's so great. Well done.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And seeing her close it in time. And also another bit there that... feel like would not have been done if they didn't have 3 extra months on it or ever extra long. When Lisa dives behind the thing to hide in the attic, she bumps into a birdcage, and it is swinging as Ned comes in. It's just a little touch that would reveal, someone's in here to a murderer. The only thing I change is like, Ned should be singing a religious song, not Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Yeah. Bringing in the she. Yeah.
But I enjoy, again, Ned performing for the audience to mislead them, like, it's time to put you away. Put you away for good. Only you can prevent accidents.
Yeah, I love that. And then just the idea of murder knocks out Flanders, and he just passes out. And this is a long clip, but you need a long clip for all of the explanation of what really happened.
Yeah.
What the gumdrops is going on here?
Came to stop you from murdering Lisa like you murdered your wife.
Murdered?
Murdered? Oh, no, I've just been in the country for a week.
But I distinctly heard you say that Maud was with God.
Oh, that's right. I was at Bible camp. I was learning how to be more judgmental.
But I saw the murder, and then I saw you bury the corpse in the backyard.
All right, it's true. I am a murderer. I overwatered Maud's favorite ficus plant. I panicked, and then I buried the remains. I was hoping to replace it before you got home.
But I heard a woman scream.
Huh? Well, now that I can't explain.
Found it, Chief.
Oh, well, I guess that explains everything.
Not everything. There's still the little matter of the whereabouts of your wife.
I'm right here.
Oh, I see. Then everything is wrapped up in a neat little package. Really, I mean that. Sorry if it sounded sarcastic.
That neat little package thing is definitely David Silverman animation. Yeah. Just the poses and the finger animation, the it just looks like package. Him. Yeah.
Yeah, it zips between poses in a very Silverman-y way, and I think Silverman was the animation director of the entire series at that point, so I could see him say, like, no, I know how Homer should act in this thing. Like, he really specializes in Homer.
Mm-hmm. I want to call out, if we criticize Harry Shearer for being a negative Nancy, this is the best acting he's ever done.
Oh, I mean, he brings it, even at this late in the series. Yeah. He has not yet given up.
And late in the series, it's the fifth season.
Well, every single line Ned Flanders gives, for the first time ever, he doesn't sound like Harry Shearer anymore.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I think this performance is awesome and shows his versatility as an actor, and I wish he cared enough.
Yeah, I
wish he knew how much people love The Simpsons and value him as an actor and want him to only
do
The
I love him
Simpsons.
So much. I criticize him because I love him and he gets angry at stuff.
I'm sad he doesn't care more.
I'm
about
a LeShow fan. Don't hate me, Harry.
I just want Harry Shearer to be happy. Please,
me too.
Harry. Like, don't hurt your friend's feelings.
So everything is wrapped up in a neat little package. Yes, and we cut to Martin, who is having his own problems. He's just standing there naked in the sunset. It's a beautiful shot,
yeah,
despite there being
really
a naked little boy in it.
He's not covering up. He's not running away. He's just so defeated. He's like, I don't care.
Seeing this in a rerun, and I have nothing profound to say, but I just saw this on syndication. Like, this show is better than every other show.
It really is.
And like, it's Martin naked singing a Sinatra song for no reason.
Here's the thing. I did some deep digging into this song. It turns out, just like every Sinatra song, he is like the sixth person to cover it.
But
this
he
song,
made it famous.
Summer Wind.
So this song started as a German song called Der Sommerwind.
Der Sommerwind!
But I could not find the original German. I can only find a Finnish version, but I found the first English language recording by Wayne Newton, who sings it in a beautiful soprano, like very high-pitched voice, and I love it. So here is the Wayne Newton version, the first English language version of The Summer Wind.
The summer wind came blowing in across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me.
I gotta say that Wayne Newton is a big gay.
I mean, that honestly fits Martin singing it more than Sinatra.
It really does.
Unlike Sinatra, he can actually sing.
That was a dumb reference to Johnny Carson constantly making gay jokes about Wayne Newton to the point where he went to
he did
vocal,
do that? Actually, I see a related clip in the YouTube we're looking at. Wayne Newton slaps Johnny Carson.
Yeah, dude, they got in a huge fight over it behind the scenes, but like, you know, Wayne Newton went to vocal training to not sound as girly anymore.
That's so sad.
It does. Like, it was an inimitable voice from a male that did sound ladylike.
Wayne Newton has an amazing voice, and he should have just embraced that, and now I think, I mean, he's not, that's maybe why he's kind of a cuckoo person.
Let's hear it for the boys, or Wayne Newton's Pool House.
I had no idea.
It was shorthand for a gay joke for Johnny Carson in the early 70s.
Then it turned into Boy George in the 80s.
It did,
Scraping barnacles off his jingle.
And also, it feels extra mean now because it's like, he was a child star. So you're a gay kid. Hey, gay kid, you're gay.
And a great singer. He would have drunk lava to stop being made fun of by Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible, but it... Yeah, the Sinatra version from 65 is the one that got most famous, which is kind of, that's more of the instrumentation we're hearing.
Taking credit for people's music, could anyone can sing like this?
I was just disappointed Martin didn't sing the whole song over it.
So you know they paid somebody.
Russie Taylor was going for it, too. Yeah. I like that. It was very earnest singing, and because Martin is an earnest character, I also just love, like, hang those who would speak of less.
Yes, he's so into his own success. And then he's reflecting upon his failure, like, very thoughtfully.
Yes,
as the submarine caresses his gentle buttocks.
And the way that pool explodes, too. Amazing animation.
Yeah.
Animating water, not easy, I would think.
I forget the Laser Time episode where Brett talks about being witness to his pool doing that. just breaking open. And it's like a Hollywood movie stunt. Like, it's,
he lost his title of Queen of Summer.
800 gallons of water flying at one moment for 10 seconds. It's going to hurt everybody involved.
So that was a great episode. I mean,
it really was.
An odd choice for the season premiere. It should have been the season 5 close. But man, what a great episode to kick off season 6. A great season. I'm so excited to do more season 6.
We get to watch it in the summer.
It's a rare time of us timing it when the episode is set. Like, we'll be in Halloween before September.
Halloween 2 years from now.
Yeah.
This is a great episode full of great references about summer. I believe this was Dan McGrath was the writer on it.
Yeah, I think he did another episode in season 5. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which one it was.
And I'm glad, you know, that earthquake, terrible tragedy, but it at least let this episode be better animated than it was. Like, if we'd seen this in the May of that year, I don't think there'd have been as many things we liked about it.
Those 53 people didn't die in vain.
57.
Oh, okay. Well, now it's worse. So, this has been Talking Simpsons. Thanks so much for listening. I'm your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts, every Monday at Retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. It's a classic gaming podcast every week, a new topic, a new classic gaming topic. If you've ever played a video game in your life, you will find something you'll love on Retronauts. I guarantee it. That is not a guarantee. I'm not offering anything legally up front here, but please listen to Retronauts.
And if you like Talking Simpsons but wish it was a week earlier and also came with hours more content and had no ads, then you should be heading over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where we'll fill your summer full of Simpson-y memories.
I think it's likely at this point we will have the Talking Critic full gear, right?
Yes, Talking Critic will have begun at this point, and we already did the first two episodes, but now we're going to be doing an episode every week, and it will be exclusive on the Patreon. So patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons is where it's going to live, along with tons of other awesome stuff, including interviews, including a community outreach podcast, so many other cool things. You should totally give it a listen and give us some money, because Bob and I did quit our jobs to do this full time, and we are doing this at your convenience.
And we thank you so much. It's been great. You will hear this episode about a month after we're recording it, but the turnout has been amazing, and I'm sure we'll hit our next goal this summer. I'm almost positive we will. We'll do more great cartoon shows after Talking Critic.
Hell yeah.
And Laser Time, I apologize. It's been a 3-beer show for me, and the site is down, but I do love doing Laser Time for you guys. Thanks for listening. Make sure to check out lasertimepodcast.com.
There's so many great things there. We just did an interview with Trace Blue of Mystery Science Theater fame.
Oh, man.
Controversial songs. Mm-hmm. So many great things.
Did a whole show about farts, motherfuckers. If that's not enough for you, I don't know what you want.
Who else is talking about farts
exactly.
in this workday world?
Something you can't get from The Simpsons Show. And my real fart.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Lisa's Rival. We'll see you then.
This is not a dream.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea.